I'm here now to introduce our next speaker. Charles W. Kelly Jr. is the director of sales for Nautel. He's a 36-year veteran of radio. He started as a DJ at the college station at the University of Illinois, and he's held positions as a news director, program director, and chief engineer at stations in Illinois and in Colorado. He was educated at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana and Illinois State University, Parkland College in Champaign, Illinois, and Fort Lewis College, and that's in Colorado, right? And prior to joining Nautel in 2006, Mr. Kelly served as Director of International Sales for Broadcast Electronics for 18 years out of Quincy, and as sales manager of ITC 3M for 7 years, so he knows a little bit about those cart machines we're gonna talk about later tonight. He's a two-term past president of the Society of Broadcast Engineers, SBE. I had the privilege of serving as secretary on the executive committee when Chuck was the president, and it was indeed an honor. And he still serves currently on the SBE International Committee. And I've had the opportunity to, when I was at Champaign-Urbana working at WILL, seen Chuck a few times when he was in town visiting his parents and his family there, and bumped into him a couple times at the farmer's market in Urbana. So we've known each other for a number of years, and he's a great speaker, and I'm gonna bring him on. Let's a big hand for Chuck Kelly.
Thank you, Keith. Well, it's a delight and an honor for me to be here with you all today. Steve Brown and I were talking earlier today about the first time I had the opportunity to come to this event, and it was in 1980. And I just joined ITC in those days, and I was brought up to talk about satellites as kind of a last-minute speaker. And I was enamored with this event at that point in time, and thrilled with the opportunity of rubbing shoulders with such technically competent people who are at the same time very friendly people that I have built long-term friendships with, and I feel that way today, so I feel very fortunate to be here with you all today. I want to explain about the presentation I'm about to give and tell you what it is and what it isn't. It is a recognition on my part of changes going on in our industry. And we all hear it all the time. We all run into it all the time, but maybe we don't realize it is what it is. Have any of you heard of the anecdote about a frog in a pot? If you put a frog in a pot of lukewarm water and you turn the heat up, and the heat rises slowly, the frog never realizes it got really hot and jumps out. If you draw a frog in a pot of boiling water, he immediately jumps out and lives. This problem that we're talking about, this slow increase of ambient noise level, is that kind of problem. It has been creeping up and increasing slowly over a period of time, and our coverage areas are affected, and yet it's happened so incrementally that it's hard to know what's going on. So the whole purpose of this presentation is not to talk about an exciting new technology or try to sell a product or any of those things. It's just to remind people that we have a problem with noise and we should think about it. And then to try to think about the things that we face in our day-to-day careers and how the noise floor may be a component of that. So it's just a reminder. Am I pointing it wrong? Try it the other way. Okay. Noise is everywhere. It's been a fact of life. Anecdotally, apparently, Marconi first complained about ignition noise in early cars. With the state of the art in receivers, the ambient noise floor, rather than the receiver sensitivity, is what limits the receiving threshold in modern AM and FM receivers. And there are three basic types of radio noise: natural, unintentional, and intentional. Atmospheric noise is primarily caused by lightning, And because of that, it varies due to the proximity of storms. The noise amplitude causes, which is caused, declines at roughly 50 dB per frequency decade from 10 kilohertz to 10 megahertz. Atmospheric noise is the dominant noise that we face in the AM band. Atmospheric noise is more problematic in nighttime hours because distant lightning storms can propagate via long distance via a sky wave. Thermal noise is also known as Johnson-Nyquist noise. It's caused by the thermal agitation of electrons and is roughly linear with respect to frequency. Because atmospheric noise declines so dramatically with frequency, thermal noise is more dominant as the noise source in the FM broadcast band. Now, I'm a radio guy, so I'm kind of limiting this to radio, but the same principles apply in television as well. Man-made power, or can we turn the sound up? There's sound, here we go. It's caused by arcing across power line equipment. It declines in amplitude with frequency and is typically more troublesome in rainy and windy conditions. It affects both AM and FM, but interestingly, it's most recognized in AM because the AM decoder receives it. You can hear it. In FM, you don't hear it so much, and so we don't realize that our coverage is being limited by this. Power lines become antennas, so it can go great distances with high tension lines. Light dimmer noise. Light dimmers are made for home use, and they incorporate thyristor devices which switch the AC line voltage with very fast rise times, which translates, just like Jeff was talking about this morning, to signals being radiated within the radio frequency bands of interest. If any of you are ham radio operators, as I am, you'll know that you can tune your receiver by adjusting these light dimmers. You can hear it, and you can hear it change complexion as you adjust your light dimmers. Unless effective filtering is used, these fast rise times can cause ringing, which causes interference in the AM band, and the AC power distribution becomes the antenna. Digital circuitry. Huge advancements have been made in the speed of computers, while at the same time there's significant growth in the number of microprocessors. Count the number of microprocessors in your car, in your home, in your radio transmitter, in your consoles. Everything that you're dealing with, there's microprocessors, and the clocks in those microprocessors are somewhere between 1 megahertz AM band and 100 megahertz or more FM band, STL, RPU, whatever you want. So these are radiators, and even though the FCC has specific regulations for how much they can act like radiators, you add up enough small radiators in a row, and you have an increase in ambient noise. In fact, one of the biggest problems with the first generation of new digital radios, like HD radio, was the fact that the high-speed microprocessors, DSP systems within those radios were acting as transmitters too. So the receiver sensitivity was limited by the amount of noise generated inside the receiver. The new, what do they call, Insignia receivers, HD receivers that you can buy at Best Buy, they have two classes of them. Apparently the early ones didn't have shields around them, and the new ones do, and the ones with shields have much better sensitivity because the antenna is outside the receiver and is isolated to us by the extent of the shield from the noise being generated by the receiver. It's also why car radios tend to be much better receivers than tabletop radios, because the antenna is outside the metal box. Touch control lamps. The way these things work is they're free-running oscillators, and when you touch that little pad, the capacitance of your body changes the frequency. The system detects that change in frequency, and it says, okay, somebody's touching, I'm going to change what I'm doing to this. So it's bad every number of ways. You've got a triac in there adjusting the light voltage, but you also have these free-running oscillators that are running all over the band. Broadband over power line. Deep concern. Not so much in the States, because the frequency range that the government is and the P, people that are promoting this technology limit it to 1.7 megahertz to 80 megahertz. So theoretically, it's between the AM and the FM bands. But the whole concept that you can take and put high-speed data on these wires hanging in air, and they're not going to act like radiators? I'm shocked. This is a big problem, and it's a big problem around the world. It's going to be a bigger problem. It's a big problem for us that are hams. It's a big problem for a lot of people, and if they get away with this in the future, it will be on top of the AM and the FM bands, and we're going to have to deal with it. This is a chart that came out of, I did a lot of research in publications that have been done for years and years. This shows the AM band noise average by location. So what was done is that they categorized locations, business, residential, rural, and quiet rural, and you can see the frequency, the dispersion of noise in a typical environment and over average in each of those locations. Now, one of the things that's very interesting about this is that 20 or 30 years ago, when you got your station license, your station was in the metropolitan area, and you radiated out, and you covered a lot of areas that were farmlands and very rural areas. And so your signal-to-noise ratio was related to this quiet rural number here. This isn't, there it is, right there. So it was the lowest, and you can see here there's a very substantial difference. What is that, 20, 24 dB or so difference in noise level between a metropolitan area, a built-up area, a business area, and a quiet rural area. Well, what happened in that 20 years? The cities grew, more and more people in that coverage area extending out into the areas where it's no longer a rural area. Now, it's a residential or business area. And you wonder why, with that noise floor going up by 24 dB, why you don't get the listening, you're not able to get the same kind of coverage area you used to get. Same thing on FM. In fact, whoops, there. Don't change again. Okay. So you can see the same kind of thing is going on FM. And there's a bigger difference between quiet rural and the areas of business. And you know, this is all supported by anecdotally. How many have ever had your manager, your program director, the founder of the station, a key listener come to you and say, you know, I used to be able to hear your station right here, but I don't anymore. What have you done? Is your antenna not as good? Is your transmitter not working? What is it? Probably it's noise. There have been many, many NTIA and other sorts of studies which have been done over the last 30 years. The problem is there's no commonality. Nobody measures the same frequency. Nobody measures it with the same kind of antennas, the same protocol, in the same locations. So without that, there's no smoking gun. All we've got is the fact that there's a lot more noise sources. We get anecdotally a lot of information about less coverage areas. But all of these studies, and I went through probably 20 or 30 of them, do not allow us to vindicate what has happened over the last 30 years, just because there's so much change in the method of measurement. So I happened to be in India in the year 2000, and there was very little broadcasting in India in the year 2000, and I happened to bring with me my ICOM ICR or PCR 1000, and I happened to dangle an antenna out the window and run the spectrum analyzer function. I hope I'm saying loud and clear that these are unscientific measurements. But nevertheless, they're indicative of what the bands were like. So this is the city of Chennai, and this is the AM band. So from 54 megahertz on the left to 1.61 megahertz on the right, there were exactly two AM stations you could hear. This is the Mumbai. I think, did I go past Delhi? Yeah. Let me go to Delhi. There's Delhi. Same basic situation. Right there, there's Mumbai. These bands were absolutely empty. You could tune your radio from one side to the other of the band and hear nothing except, you know, the fluorescent lights or whatever. There were very few stations, two stations in every market. This was before privatization. Think of it as the U.S. before 80-90, right? Here's the FM band. Now, interestingly enough, only the lower half of the FM band in India at that point in time was commercial broadcast or broadcasting. The upper end of the band was public service, and that's since changed. There was the public service stuff in Delhi. And that's Mumbai. So it was relatively noisy, but all of that went away because they privatized the FM band. Now, although I don't have my PCR 1000 anymore, and I certainly couldn't replicate the exact locations, those bands are just like any major city in the United States. If you put a spectrum analyzer on an antenna in your facilities and you listen to those bands, it's completely different. It's completely noisy, not just because of all the broadcast stations, but because of all of the other noise sources. And that's only 9 years. What is the effect of raising the noise floor by 16 dB? The difference between a rural area in FM and a metropolitan area in FM is 16 dB. So what's the effect of coverage? So I used Radio Mobile. If you don't know Radio Mobile, you should check it out. Google it. It's very good. I used Radio Mobile to do just an interesting analysis of what happens if I raise the sensitivity, that is, decrease the sensitivity of an FM radio by 16 dB. And this is what happens. The yellow is the coverage area before the noise increase, and the green is the coverage area after the noise increase. And you can see that the actual coverage area in terms of square miles is reduced by 71%. That's what happens if the area where you're where people are hearing you, if the overall coverage area, the noise floor goes up either by an increase of noise sources or by the fact that you're now listening in an area which is industrialized as opposed to a rural area. Now the thought comes up here, when we were all given our licenses, fill in the blank how many years ago, the government didn't have in their mind, the FCC did not have in their mind a number. I'm going to give this guy 5,000 watts. They didn't know watts for nothing. What they gave was a coverage area. And that coverage area is no longer being met. We don't have that same coverage area, we have something less. So I'm just planting a seed. I'm letting people understand that we don't have what we used to have. And it's because of noise. And we need to look at what can we do to get back to the coverage area that we were originally granted. What can we do? Not a lot. We can consider changes to the transmitter location, power, antenna gain, height, and directivity to provide a higher signal strength over the areas most affected by the increased noise. Boosters fall in that category. Well, boosters is the next one. To reach areas geographically separated or which have terrain shielding. Translators, another choice, which can provide targeted coverage in key areas. One interesting thing, and I know we've got plenty of time for questions and things, but one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine, and it's very topical at the moment, is we're talking about, and we've been talking about in this session, the increased levels of HD injection, right? We're talking about that. And people will say the reason we're having increased levels of HD radio is because of building penetration. Nonsense. The reason, think about it this way. Analog signals go through walls the same as the digital signals. It's not building penetration that's the problem. It's the fact that when the analog and the digital signals go through the walls, the noise environment in the office is higher, the signal level is less, and the digital sidebands are getting covered up by that noise floor. It's really a noise problem. It's not a building penetration problem. There's nothing in the composition of stucco and concrete that is able to differentiate between a digital signal and an analog signal. So when we talk about this situation of HD signals and try to understand it's not building penetration. The very first time I heard about increasing HD power levels, remember I was with BE and I was on the international side, so I was out around the world trying to start up HD radio in other countries. And one of the places I went to was Kiev, Ukraine. And in Kiev, Ukraine, a broadcaster there that has about 100 stations and is a degreed electrical engineer, actually with his PhD, Andrei Karpi, put on his station in Kiev, and he did it with separate antennas. He had his little, relatively low-powered FM analog transmitter, and he bought a digital-only transmitter, and he adjusted it for minus 20. And then he drove around Kiev. Well, Kiev is a very, very industrialized city, lots of noise. And he found experimentally, and this is a long time ago, he found experimentally he doesn't get the same coverage in his analog as he gets in his digital. Well, it's really easy in his environment to turn up the digital transmitter. So he did. And he found that if he advanced the power of his transmitter to about minus 13 dB, he had the same coverage. If he advanced it any further, he got noise in his analog. Any of this make sense? Any of this ring true? It's really interesting because this all happened completely outside of the political discussions and the NPR versus Ubiquiti and versus everybody else. It was completely independently done and verified years before by a guy by the name of Andrei Karpi in Kiev, Ukraine. And that was the first time that anybody ever brought this whole thing to my attention. And he said, this is the right thing to do. Now, conversely, a couple of years before that, I had done an installation in Adelaide, Australia, southern part of Australia. 10 kilowatt FM station, separate antenna, 100 watts, same antenna configuration, same tower, everything's very clean. We got in a rental car, I had two antennas on the top of the vehicle, and we went driving. We got 70 miles away, and just at the point where the analog was getting very noisy, the digital went away. Almost exactly, within a mile. So what was the difference? The difference is, when we were driving to the end of that road in Australia, there was nothing but us and wallabies. Right? There was nothing there. There was no build-up population. It was completely as rural as it could possibly be. And that's why minus 20 worked. It was almost exactly the same. So minus 10, minus 14, minus 20, they weren't mistakes on anybody's part. But we all have to take a look at those numbers, in my opinion, and analyze what you really need within your coverage area to have parity. And you certainly, in my opinion, don't want to go any higher than minus 13, or you're going to start affecting the main carrier with signal-to-noise issues on your main carrier. So that's another way of looking, using this noise discussion and looking at things that are happening today and saying, how does noise affect us on a daily basis? We used to be much more aware of noise when we worked in AM stations because the demodulators, you heard it. It was very obvious what was happening. But when you get noise on an FM demodulator, or even more so on a digital demodulator, things just go away. You don't hear the noise. So the reason for this presentation is just to recalibrate everybody and say, you know, it's all about noise at the end of the day. So that, whoops. That's the basis of my presentation. I believe, to summarize, that the increase in urbanization, the proliferation of unintentional radiators of man-made noise, and the increase in the number of AM and FM stations worldwide is having an effect on the coverage area of radio stations today. Those stations that went on the air 10 or more years ago, who are in increasingly urban areas, are at the greatest risk of experiencing reduced coverage area. So that's my presentation. I'm very open to questions. It wasn't a long or detailed presentation, but I'm very open to questions. Yes, please.
Sure. Okay. I would support your conclusions 150%. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I did a study specifically addressing the problems of HD reception and in general FM and AM reception in homes and offices. Because they had a notable observation was that the car was in the car.
Right.
And that's even questionable in some cases. But that was an assumption on the part of management. But the building penetration problem, I was seeing with a portable spectrum analyzer, I looked at an apartment building situation, a residential situation, a suburban residential, and offices. And noise levels just stepping inside the threshold of the door would jump 20 to 30 feet over the background that I had in the driveway or the parking lot.
Right.
So there's some serious problems, and the most notable offenders I found were modern wall-mounted power supplies that were based on switch mode technology. They were cell phone chargers and power supplies for DVD players and things like that, just screaming the value.
Right.
And another point, and maybe I'm being a little presumptuous, but there is something I think we could do if we could find ways to have manufacturers held more accountable for the standards that already exist for noise radiation.
Part 15. Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else have comments or experiences or questions or suggestions? Steve?
Chuck, you mentioned the station in India.
Yep.
I don't know the Kiev station.
Yep.
And you said, yeah, I think in both cases they were running separate antennas. That's going to have an effect on radiation patterns and the ratio of the digital to analog power also.
It would, and certainly stations that have antennas that are different in their radiation patterns vertically and horizontally, we'll see that. But the effect of that was in the noise, Steve. we were really talking about gross issues at that point in time. We're not talking about a temporary dropout here or there. Yeah, the antennas were basically the same.
I'm going to bring up a nasty subject.
Okay.
Driving across the country, listening to the AM band, and one of the biggest noise sources I'm hearing is IVOC noise. Terrible amount of different parts of the country. And it really adds significant to the noise well in many areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will say also anecdotally that in my driveway in the fall and the early winter, in my driveway at the office as I'm heading home from work, about 800 miles from New York and Boston, I can hear a number of HD radio stations and they come in full lock. There's pluses and minuses. It's a powerful technology. The question is, how can we do it without causing ourselves additional interference? Yes. Oh, there's a lot. RF lights. There are light bulbs now that create the power. They're more efficient, but they create it with RF. And they radiate. Yeah. Fluorescent lights have always been bad. Yeah.
Chuck.
Yeah.
Obviously, part of what you're saying there is digital radio is a noise generator to analog radio, and you got to be careful when you get into that situation. But I wonder if you have any opinion or care to comment on what they're trying to do with unlicensed devices in white spaces for television channels to transmit broadband, which will be noise generating devices in the TV band.
Well, there's huge demand for spectrum. And you can tell that because of what people get, what they buy it for. Supply and demand, there's more demand than there is supply. And so therefore, because there's huge demand and there's money to be made, there are companies that are going to make arguments that seem to fly in the face of physics. But if you listen, you know, the SBE does more for all of us than any of us realize. And Dane Erickson should have a huge debt of gratitude from every one of us broadcasters, whether we're SBE members or not, because he's out there as a defender for our frequencies all the time. And sometimes he does it kind of alone, because there's all this massive money on this side of people that can make big money by saying, well, yeah, but I'm gonna do it over here and you'll never hear it. Well, physics doesn't work that way. And so, you know, support Dane Erickson and what he does with the FCC liaison committee, because he's fighting for all of our rights. And one of the best things about SBE, in my opinion, is that the SBE can take stands like that that we as individual broadcasters would find very difficult and expensive to do. Thank you. Any other ideas or questions? Yes.
Chuck, what?
There's a mic coming here.
What are some of your thoughts on getting the power company it does come and wash off their insulators on some things that are 60, 70 years old, and they are noise, local noise generators. But if you've ever worked with a power company,
oh yeah, very difficult.
Get them off their derriere to do something is another story.
One of the suggestions I would have is there is a very, very powerful resource that many of us can take advantage of, and that's the ARRL. In fact, in preparing this paper and trying to understand, I knew I wanted to say something. I knew I wanted to prepare a paper. I didn't know where it was going to go, right? There's no smoking gun, right? But I felt it needed to be said. So I called up John, I believe his name is John Hare, at the ARRL in Newington. And he is the guy who is constantly fighting broadband over power line, AC power distribution noise problems off of insulators and all those sorts of things. He is a wealth of resource. And if you happen to be a ham, there's nothing stopping you from giving him a call in Newington, Connecticut, and picking his brain. And he's got tons of information there about exactly these issues, and he'll help you fight. He'll give you the details. In fact, there's part of the ARRL website that's dedicated to exactly these kinds of issues. And I recommend that those of you who can take advantage of that talk to him. Yes?
On that same point, I was astonished to see the FCC actually issuing some enforcement against utility companies for noise generation. Now, there
are cases
that have gone on for many years, and the power companies were notably uncooperative. But that is after several decades of never seeing any enforcement against power companies for radio.
This is pretty serious. You know, right now, if you look at 71% of your coverage area going away, you know, that's a specific example, but it's not out of the realm of reality. It is happening, and it does happen. Other thoughts or comments or questions? Thank you for all these comments. Because really, this is an issue that really ought to be more of a roundtable discussion than a presentation, because we all have data points. Any other thoughts? Okay. I thank you very much. I appreciate the time.